Okay, it's all good. Action. Come closer. Yeah, hello everyone. Oh god. It's always this hard. It's always this hard. I swear to God, it's always this hard.
It is.
Yeah, it's always this hard. Like,
what's the name of the podcast again?
Late for Stand
Up. Oh, yeah.
So. Everyone lies at Stand Up. Hello, listeners. Welcome to our podcast. This is a continuation of our previous podcast where we talked about new Ubisoft engineers and the problems they face in the industry. So in this episode, we're going to talk about how to learn on the job as a software engineer, some of the techniques that we used when we were starting out, and some ideas we have about mentorship, both from the perspective of being a mentor yourself and also from the perspective of being a mentee. So let's get to it.
You've been to an interview and then you've been offered a job and virtually no experience as to how to go about software development. You might feel all high and mighty about your skills and your craft, but then you and I know that getting your very first software development job can really be a bit overwhelming. So how do you propose, or how do you think once you go about developing our skills when I get a job to that level of standard that is met in almost every software development?
So the first thing I'll say is you should strive to, one, get a job which will challenge you and make you learn.
Okay.
And yeah, you should get a job which will challenge you and make you learn. And you should also be quite active, like ready to do work at all times. We're not saying be doing work on weekends or holidays, but then you should always have that attitude to always want to pick up something and not just be part of the process, but be part of the process and understand what is going on. Because a lot of the experience we gain from in software engineering is through domain knowledge as well. It's not really your programming skills. You can be a better programmer than someone else, but the person has maybe in-depth knowledge on, let's say, finance or HRIS, and that might make him or her more marketable than you are. So it's also important to try and understand the processes, and you can do that by actively getting involved to the development cycle. Which also brings up another question I have in mind, which is like a follow-up to this. Avi, do you think getting into software engineering as a newbie or someone new in the field, do you think you should focus on money?
Well, I would say no. Most of the time, very first instinct when you get your very first job, like mm-hmm. very first job isn't money, is to want to do things.
How sure are you? Because probably you entered from a more tech point of view, like you did it in school and you enjoyed the affairs, but then we have people now who are entering the field because of money, which isn't a bad thing mm-hmm. because you always have to look out for yourself, but then it shows a much more promising career yep. because people get paid well. So I'm quite further in my years and I want to switch careers into software engineering because I feel like I'll get paid well.
Well, I have absolutely no problem with that. I have no problem with the reasons why people like, if the reason why you get into software engineering or even IT in the first place is because of money. If that's your reason, it's a good reason. Money is a good thing. But then the point I'm trying to make is that if it's a very first job, money shouldn't be the primary focus, because you most likely won't be earning a lot. And if that is the only main focus for you, I don't think you would last long in software. Like, you would last long in the industry then. Because even in most other industries, your entry level jobs don't pay that well. And I don't even want to start talking about Ghana here. So entry level jobs don't really pay well. So it's a very, so fine, money can be a motivational factor to get into the industry. Great, it's all good. But then if it's the very first job, if it's the very first time working in that capacity, you won't be paid. You won't be paid that much. It's an experience thing, software engineering. The more experience you get, the more you can bargain for a good or a better pay. So if you have like zero experience, you shouldn't be expecting six figures.
Like, no one wants to pay potential.
Exactly. Potential is, this is a gamble. You don't pay potential. You give them an environment where they can try to realize that potential, but then you don't pay them. You just give them something like a stipend that they could, you know, survive for in a month or something. Then once they start realizing their potential, obviously they themselves will even come back and you saying, hey, I'm realizing my potential, I'm not seeing I can do a lot of things, are you going to pay me more, or I should leave and go in for someone who pay me more? And that's where you can start, you know, getting more pay. But the very first time you get into the industry, you won't be paid that kind of money. You won't be paid a lot. So yeah, it'd be a motivational factor. It's great. Money is a good thing. It can be the reason why you get into software engineering or even IT. But then don't expect it to come like a quantum leap. It doesn't work that way.
So what should the focus be on?
Well, the focus should be on you trying to hone your skill, like you trying to make yourself useful, being able to deliver on things or learning a lot. Because the more you know, the more you can bargain, the more you can impress at interviews, and the more they realize that you can be very, what do you call it, useful to them in their company. And once any recruiter or any company realize that this guy can actually be great at a company, then you can have some bargaining chips in your pocket. You can tell them, hey, I want that kind of money. But if they don't even give it to you, you have the confidence that you know enough to apply for a different company and get a job over there and get that kind of money you're looking for. Because there are options all over. So the focus should be on you honing a skill, like you developing that skill to a point where you feel confident enough to go out there and work for any other company, like any company at all. So you should develop the skill, learn a lot, and then, well, just be great at your job. That should be the focus.
Yeah, okay. So what about when you were getting into, when you were getting to tech first, was the money good?
No, the money wasn't good. Wasn't good. But I wasn't complaining. because I just realized that after completing school and I got the first job, I realized that I didn't know anything. Fine, I could write some few lines of code. I could write some code. I could do some things with code and stuff. But I just realized that when it came to software engineering, I had zero idea, because there were a lot of problems or hurdles to overcome. There was the issue of domain knowledge. Like, you could be thrown into a finance industry if you have zero knowledge about finance. How are you going to write code to create a financial application? And there was this issue about work environment or even being productive enough. Like, writing good enough code. You can write code, but then is the code good enough? Is it good enough to pass certain tests and stuff? So there were a whole lot of hurdles. So I wasn't complaining because of those hurdles, and me realizing that, no, I don't know anything, and there's actually an opportunity for me to learn stuff from people who actually know things. So that's how I just saw it, and then I kept quiet, tucked my tail between my legs, and learned. And that's actually paid a lot. But I'm not saying that you should stay in that position for a long time, because you need to learn quickly, as fast as you can, so that you can start earning money, because like I said, money is a good thing.
For me, in my case, it was pretty weird, because I was quite content with what I was being paid, even though I won't accept something like that now, but I was actually quite content and happy with what I was being paid, because I entered and I felt like wow, I was being paid to learn.
Okay.
And it was amazing because when I entered, I immediately knew that I didn't know a lot, even though I thought I knew a lot when I was in uni. So I think I was actually quite content. And yeah, this also leads me to another thing, which is about how important learning can be. And this is because what I fear the most in my career is for me to be not worth what I think I am, or not worth my years of experience, right? So I don't want to end up being an engineer with 7 years experience, and my 7 years experience is probably actually equivalent to 2 years, because you know the thing about experience is that it's a pretty tricky way to gauge someone's skills, because someone can boast of 5 years of experience. And I've had cases where I've met guys with way more years of experience than I did, and then I'm like, wow, does this guy really have 6 years of experience? Because compared to me, this guy is probably a baby. And then other cases where I'm like, okay, wow, this guy says he has 7 years of experience, but then if I compare him to other engineers which I know who have 7 years of experience and less, I don't think he cuts it. Yeah. You know, and that is a situation which I dread to be in. So I think as much as possible, the most important thing is to always keep improving on your skills so that you won't end up being redundant.
Yeah, with the experience thing, one way to actually mitigate the experience thing, that relative experience where we have 3 years of experience is equivalent to someone's 8 years of experience, is to always make sure you find yourself in an environment where it's actually challenging, and where you actually challenge yourself to actually do better. You shouldn't find yourself in a work environment where you are comfortable, because once you're in a comfort zone, you won't learn anything. You just be doing mundane things. You've been doing things that has become mundane to you. And you, by so doing, you won't learn anything. You won't sharpen any skill. You'll just be stagnant as you were. So fine, the years will pass by, but then nothing has changed really. You're still the same person as you were 3 years ago. So that's how come this relative experience thing happened.
Yeah.
So the best way is make sure you find yourself in a challenging environment. Make sure your work is as difficult to the point that you can't almost do the work, but then you force yourself to get it done. And if you find yourself where things are just normal, every day, no pressure, you're just there and just taking a basic salary, a small salary, and you're happy with that, you should try as much as possible to run away from that company.
Yeah, but just so that no one confuses us, pressure doesn't necessarily mean toxic company environment. No, when we mean pressure, we don't mean a toxic company environment or company politics, organizational politics, and all of that. We mean pressure to learn and pressure to try and improve on your skills. Yeah, so that's just a disclaimer.
Yep. So like I was saying, you should try as much as possible to challenge yourself and then find yourself in a challenging environment. That's the only way you can learn and keep learning. If you find that the company you are in currently is no longer challenging, just apply for new jobs somewhere that you think will be challenging. And then once you get a job, you can resign and move there. And that way you can continue to develop your skills. That way you can continue to learn new things. And that's the only way you can maintain or have an equivalent, years of experience in terms of numbers, and then what I call experience worth.
Yeah, that's true. And just I think to add to this, I have this saying where the saying goes like this, right? It's all about the money, but at the same time, it's not all about the money. And this just means that sometimes, even though it's all about the money, right? Sometimes it's not about the money. You have to consider other things which would help you develop yourself. And when you do develop yourself, you are eventually going to get more money. So for instance, if let's say person A and person B enter a job, right? And person B is just maybe concerned with the money during his earlier parts of his journey, and person A is not concerned about the money, they are all getting paid though, and is focusing on crafting, improving on his craft. In 2 years' time, right, person B might probably have gathered like X amount of money, and person A might not have a lot of money after the 2 years. But then in their third year, person A gets a job because he has honed his skills a lot. He gets a job which pays so well that he could literally make back all the money person B had made in the last 2 years just chasing money in just his first 6 months of the job. And that is how much as a software engineer you could exponentially increase your value. And that is why it's also very necessary to always hone your craft and improve on your skills. So at the end of the day, it's all about the money, but it's also not all about the money. But then again, it's all about the money.
Money is good. Okay, so I think we've talked a lot about you challenging yourself and then, you know, learning new stuff. How would you combine it to having to work under pressure, like work and deliver on your job? How do you do about doing that?
Yeah, this is actually quite tricky, because I think recently at work, we're facing that issue where some of the engineers were having, like, my work encourages self-learning. So some of the engineers were having like issues because they're not able to meet self-learning targets and work on professional courses and stuff like that. And then I felt like depending on your schedule, like I said, or like we've hammered on earlier, you always have to find yourself in an environment where you're learning. So I might not necessarily take maybe a certification course or try and set out to learn what Ruby on Rails or something else. But then in what you do every day, you could improve on new skills, even in your current domain, which falls in line with what you do. Another instance is, for instance, right, I've been writing C# for a while, and that's what I get paid to do. And then I start writing Golang. I didn't just sit down randomly and say, hey, okay, I'm gonna learn Golang, right? Even though you can do that. But I didn't just sit down randomly and just say, okay, I'm gonna learn Golang. And then after learning Golang, it's just going to be on the shelf. Because I actually did that with Angular some years ago. I studied Angular, just did a couple of projects. But like, if you ask me anything about Angular, I probably can't write or build any significant project, because all that knowledge just went to waste. But then I found myself in an environment where I was demanded I learn a new programming language, and then I had to learn on the job.
Okay.
So that is why it's also very important to maximize your efforts in a project and try and understand the entire process, because a lot of the years of experience and learnings are not things you can just cram overnight by reading a couple of thousand page books, but by actually making sure you participate in the entire process of the work you do. So I still learn like things sometimes, like set out time to pick up new technology, side projects and other stuff. And I think one of the easiest ways to learn is to try and work on maybe a side project. Yeah, there are so many ways to go about it, but
yeah. So I think like you said, there are so many ways, but I've realized that if you have a job and you actually want to continue learning, there are two main ways or two major ways that to go about it. One is obviously a traditional way of learning. You pick up a book on a topic. You pick a book on a topic, then you try to learn like the traditional way. The other way, I'll come back to that later. But the other way is you actually picking up tax. That's actually quite challenging, or tax that you have little knowledge on. That way, in order to get a tax done, you need to go and learn new stuff. Like you need to go and learn new topics or learn new domains for you to complete that tax. That way, once you pick such a tax, you would obviously be forced to learn because you need to get a tax done. But then the issue with that process is that is, number one, it's not highly organized. Even though you're learning new things, it's not highly organized, and it can take forever to master a particular, what do you call it, area or a particular domain. It's an effective way of actually learning new things on the job. Picking up tasks that you're not really comfortable with, or tasks that you have like little idea or zero idea about, and they're actually trying to get it done. Also going to learn new things or read on things to know how to get a task done. Back to the traditional way. If you have a job and you need to maybe read a book on a particular topic or something, you're not in school, so you don't have, your goal isn't learning, your goal is actually to deliver on a job. And one thing I realized is that people set unrealistic goals in terms of timelines. They say, I need to get this book done within a week, forgetting that they have work to deliver on. when they don't finish reading the book within a week, then they start becoming frustrated, then they treat the book, they let the book gather dust altogether, they don't just stop reading altogether. So one thing you need to keep in mind, and you need to keep your focus, is that when you pick up a book to read, give yourself realistic timelines. You know you need to deliver on your tasks, and you also need to read. So give yourself a good amount of time that you need to. If you feel like, okay, fine, if you said, I need to finish the book in 1 week, change it to 2 weeks or 3 weeks. If it's 3 weeks, change it to 4 or 5 weeks, because you're working and you also need to learn. So you need to pace yourself very well. You need to set realistic goals and not just act like Superman and be like, I'll finish this book in 1 week. Because if you don't finish that book in 1 week, you become frustrated and then you don't read the book altogether. So pacing yourself is actually quite, or spacing the amount of time you need, to read a book is actually good, what I call it, I think.
No, it's not really.
Okay, so moving on, mentoring. I know you personally are mentoring some few people, and first of all, how do you come about like finding a mentor, and how would you advise someone to find mentors in their working space?
I think anybody can help is good. The way I see mentoring, right, people are too formal about it, and I think that's the problem. Like, you don't need to have someone who is going to come to you like your child, always asking you or needing things from you. It doesn't have to be that way.
Okay.
You can easily volunteer to anyone who needs help through so many ways. Someone at work who is struggling, maybe a colleague, engineer, or even a friend who is trying to, like, you could even task yourself by just volunteering.
But the thing is, as a newbie developer, when you think is the right time to look for a mentor? Is it the moment to get a job, or even before you get a job?
So to look for a mentor, right? Just like mentoring, you don't need to have it official. Okay. So you don't need to have one person there who is your mentor that you'd always be, in quotes, crying to for help or asking for assistance or stuff. I feel like there are a lot of people in the tech ecosystem, the tech community, who are always willing to help. If you have an answer, if you have a question you want to ask, you could just hit any of them up, ask them for help, ask them for assistance, and if they're available, they would help you. So when you're in the issue of mentorship, right?
Yeah.
It's not it's not, mentorship is not all about just having one person who is dedicated to you and you alone. People are quite busy and people would also not be available all the time. So our advice, it's best you make use of the opportunity of available people within your tech ecosystem. The person doesn't need to be one person who is always going to be spoon feeding you with information or spoon feeding with decisions and steps you have to take in your career. It could be multiple people. It could be 5, 10. There are so many people you could learn from. It could be your manager at work. You pick some things from him. Maybe you see someone on Twitter or some spaces or something talking about something interesting. You engage into some Slack channel, see a few people. You can always hit them up and ask them a few questions. They might guide you to things you could learn. And you should also be willing to learn for yourself. Like, someone might not take time and be teaching you on a video call as if you're in high school or something. Like, someone might give you articles, you know, try this or read on this and maybe you can get back to me. Okay. Or read on this and you could help solve your solution. So if you're looking for a mentor, you might be lucky and get maybe a dedicated mentor for you who might be willing to go the full length and do everything they can with you, spoon feed you and all of that. But then just because you don't have someone dedicated to doing that doesn't also mean you can't benefit off the mentorship of other people. And that should be the mindset.
Okay, so the next thing I want to, just like a follow-up, how soon do you think like a newbie developer can mm-hmm. be a mentor to someone else? Or a developer can be a mentor to someone else, basically? If you've worked for 6 months, a year, or two, how soon do you think is the ideal situation for someone to start mentoring other people? And why do you think that is important?
I don't think there's a set time. I started doing like official mentorship, like engaging in mentorship programs a couple of years ago. But prior to that, I've had a lot of people which I've assisted and have been regulars coming to me and me helping them out with tasks, guiding them through their paths. So I think it's something which comes naturally as you're helping people, right? There's not a specific level that you might have to get to. Let's say you built an app which processes something, right? And you push it to the community, it's on GitHub or something like that. Someone might see it, or maybe you're even tweeting about a particular topic, or you write an article. Someone might see it and be interested and might contact you for assistance, and the mentorship could just begin from there. You helping the person out, trying to help the person figure out something, or even giving free advice. So there's not a specific time, but I feel like when the time is right, you would eventually start doing it. Because even in uni, like, I was helping our colleagues a couple of times. People don't understand things you try and teach them, and it's all part of the process. But I think it's also a skill which you'd have to develop deliberately, because the problem with a lot of engineers in their career is they don't really know how to give back, or should I say interact with junior developers. Like, I'm sure there are a lot of things I didn't know when I was coming up, right? But then now you know those things, and there's a junior developer on your team and they are unfamiliar, you might find yourself getting angry, like, why doesn't he know this? But then it's not that the person is bad or something, but probably you just need more patience, because people grab things at different paces. So even though there's not a specific time where you could start picking up or you could start like mentoring people, I feel like it's a skill which you have to deliberately develop.
Yeah, so I get the point. But then how has it helped your career? You mentoring other people at an early stage, is it beneficial to you, and how has it been beneficial in general?
Yeah, it has been beneficial because it helps me understand how people think, and it has also challenged me to do things which I didn't even think I could do, like maybe help someone on a particular project. They might bring a problem to you which you might not necessarily know how to solve yourself, and you try and look into it, and you gain a lot learning from them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Personally, I find mentoring to be quite an interesting task. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes you feel like you don't have time to do it, or even talk to or go on a call with someone, discuss an issue that you might even find to achieve or anything. But then I see it as a way of affirming the knowledge I've gained, because you've been able to transfer the knowledge you have to a different person, and making them understand what you're trying to tell them is a way of you being confident in the knowledge you've already gained. So that's the only thing I really enjoy about mentoring. It's sort of like an affirmative way of knowing
that's
you really
true.
Know your stuff.
That's true. Because quite recently, I've been mentoring a couple of people, and I was mentoring this guy. I think I usually started with like basics of web development, HTML and CSS, and he probably writes better HTML and CSS than I do, even though I was the one mentoring him to hone these skills. And it's just amazing how like you can push people to be that good and to even pick up things which you might not even be able to do yourself. And that's actually a very helpful skill in the work environment.
So then in selecting a mentor, how do you go about that whole process? What's the typical kind of like, what type of people do you go out or do you seek mentorship from? Because obviously we have different personalities at workplaces or in tech communities and stuff. What kind of personality do you look out for, and why do you go out for such people?
So for me, I try to look out for someone that I could learn from, anyone I could learn from, and not try to, try to get too involved with the person's social life, because the person, X person, might be a great developer but might not necessarily be a great person or something. So like, okay, I look at what I can achieve by maybe gaining or working with that particular person, not try to look at other aspects of the person's life, because technically that's their life and none of your business. And you can't also spend your time idolizing people only to get disappointed by certain traits that they have which you didn't expect, because at the end of the day, whether the person is a principal engineer or a senior software engineer, they're still human. So that is one of the things I try to do, and I also don't try to, the whole mentorship thing doesn't need to have a tag. It doesn't need to have a tag to it. Someone that you contact every day and ask. Like, I have a lot of seniors which I contact when I need or when I face an issue, and there's no tag that they are mentoring. There's no tag to it that I'm their mentee or they're my mentor or something, but then when I contact them, they are helpful. So I think that kind of eases things too, because once you add this tag, there's this forced responsibility. At the same time too, I feel like you could limit your options too. So then it's not like the person is your spouse or something which you need to. Yeah. It's not like the person is your spouse or your partner which you need to remain faithful to. Like, if you need help from anyone, you could always ask anyone else, right? Like, that's that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I get the point of making with the tag.
Even though like I mentor people and we have a tag, like I'm their mentor and all of that, but that shouldn't limit them from experiencing or gaining knowledge from other people as well, because I can only do so much, right? The thing about mentorship is a lot actually depends on the individual's potential as well. So yeah, if you have potential and you're teachable, you could gain a whole lot. At the same time, if you're not teachable, you won't even benefit, even if the person was dedicated to mentoring only you.
Yep. I think I quite agree with the tag thing, because you don't need to officially make it. But what I look for, the main things I actually look out for when I'm seeking out a mentor, basically two things. The first being the person's knowledge base. How much knowledge does a person think? Or obviously that might stem from the fact that a person has more experience than I do. Second thing, which is also equally important to the first, is their willingness to mentor or to teach you stuff they know. Because sometimes you meet people, they know a lot, they show a lot in your work and deliver a lot, but then they're not really willing to be that open to you or to help you out.
Yeah, I think a problem with that is sometimes it's not like they're not willing. Some people just don't know how to do it. Don't you think that's the case as well?
Well, that might be the case. They might not know how to do it, or they might not even have the time to do it. Which case, they become not so great mentors then. Because to be a great mentor, you need to be able to make the time, and you need to be able to know how to actually go about mentoring other people. So not everyone can be a mentor. Some people can be great at their work. Some people can be great at writing code or delivering on a task, but they might not be great at passing the knowledge into another person. So you need to look at those things too, the amount of knowledge they have and their willingness to actually teach you or impart that knowledge into you. So those are the two things I look out for when I'm selecting. I think we've talked about a lot of things, and I believe we are at the tail end of. I hope you all enjoyed it and would like to hear from you in the comment section.
Thank you all for listening. We'll catch you on our next episode.